Hello, and welcome to Mission Artist. Today we are speaking with journalist and mental health advocate, Carrie Seidman. Seidman has been a reporter, critic, and columnist for a number of news agencies that include the New York Times, Los Angeles Herald Examiner, Albuquerque Journal, Albuquerque Tribune, and the Sarasota Herald Tribune. She's covered a broad range of subjects, from the arts to community advocacy, and now is turning her focus onto the mental health experience. Following her son's diagnosis of schizoaffective disorder, Seidman began a journey that would culminate into the Facing Mental Illness blog and podcast that shares stories of individuals dealing with mental health issues. In 2015, Seidman wrote a powerful series of articles and interviews in the Sarasota Herald Tribune titled The S Word. These delved into the experience of those who have been diagnosed, as well as the people around them who had to struggle, fight, and advocate for the proper care and compassionate treatment of their loved ones. This series won Mental Health America's 2016 National Media Award. That year, Seidman was selected as a fellow of the Carter Center for Mental Health Journalism, the nation's leading community-based nonprofit dedicated to addressing the needs of those living with mental illness, and the Community Engagement Award from the American Society of Newspaper Editors. In conjunction with the Carter Center Fellowship, Seidman launched a year-long community engagement project aimed at shedding light on the stories of individuals with mental health challenges. Individuals were invited to create a self-portrait capturing their feelings about their experiences using art supplies and guidance that were provided through a series of sponsored workshops. The culmination of this project was a month-long exhibition of the resulting artwork at Selby Public Library, a book titled Facing Mental Illness, The Art of Acceptance, and a documentary that was featured at the Sarasota Film Festival. In 2020, Seidman turned her focus onto bringing the Facing Mental Illness platform to a nationwide audience through the newsletter, blog, and podcast. The goals of the platform are to normalize, educate, and empower individuals with lived experience as educators and advocates. Finally, to accumulate a nationwide anecdotal database of the best practices to help individuals in recovery achieve a holistic well-being. When I began this interview, I shared a quote from journalist and Radiolab host Robert Krolwich about the collective writings and observations of a similarly dedicated artist, Oliver Sacks. Krolwich said, "He will tell stories about people in terrible trouble who are brave and special and full of heart, paralyzed but not over. And he will take this thread of them and he will pull them slowly out. But what he also did simultaneously is he pulled the whole world in the other way. And the net effect is that people who are lonely and left out, people in all kinds of mental difficulties, are storied back into the world. This is something I feel Seidman and her projects accomplish beautifully."
It's a wonderful quote, and it's what I aspire to do. I don't know that I have achieved that. It's certainly my hope and intention that I do a little of that, especially the drawing the other people in.
Absolutely, with the projects that you've been doing, it does. It literally stories people back in, so they don't remain silent.
Well, I think like probably the vast majority of the people I've met who have become mental health advocates or gone into the mental health world professionally, the catalyst was personal experience, and that is often the case. And in my case, it was my son, who has had a number of challenges from birth because he has a fairly unknown genetic condition. But I was not aware, even after he had been diagnosed with that condition, that it carried a 1 in 3 chance of developing mental health issues. And in fact, he did develop some pretty significant mental health challenges when he was in his early 20s. And as you noted before, I went through a long process with trying to get him help, trying to find services for him here in Florida, which is not known as a nation leader in terms of mental health treatment and coverage. And that experience of trying to help him get the help he needed and then reintegrate and rebuild a life again, that ended up going into the series that I did for the Herald Tribune called The S Word that you referred to. And it was interesting because at that time, I was not originally planning to write my own story. I was, you know, I'm a reporter and I'm not used to writing first person. And so the idea originally was to tell a story of another family who had gone through some situation like mine, or perhaps even a couple of families. And I had a very, very difficult time finding anyone who was willing to tell their story and who was willing to come forward and use their name and be photographed. So the S Word did have one other family with a kind of similar situation, but I ended up writing my own story because, largely because at that time, the stigma about talking about mental health issues was even, I mean, not that it doesn't still exist today, it does, but it was even so much stronger then that I could not find people who would come forward and be interviewed. And the interesting thing about that story was, you know, my editors were very gung-ho for me writing the story, and I was willing to be photographed. But the problem is when you have a huge, long newspaper story, and of course, at that time, it was mostly people looking at it in print rather than online, you have to have something to illustrate it. And if no one's willing to be photographed, you have no photographs. So we got around that by I hired a local artist in Sarasota who created illustrations, and he himself had a diagnosis of schizophrenia. So it was kind of wonderful to be able to give him that opportunity to showcase his work and provide these original illustrations for the series. So that was kind of how it all began. That series ended up, as you said, getting more attention than I maybe expected. It did win the Mental Health America National Media Award, and that brought me to apply for the Carter Center Fellowship. And then it kind of just evolved into being a big part of my journalistic work. I continued as a full-time writer for the Herald Tribune till the end of 2020, and I eventually became the lead columnist there. I still write a column for them once a week, and a lot of those columns focus on mental health issues. Not all of them, it's a pretty broad range column, but a journalism work became a big part of my professional life.
I'm thinking about you bringing in this artist to create the artwork. Is that sort of the catalyst for the eventual project you would do with the art and bringing those two things together?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know that it was intentionally that I went, aha, now I can do this. You know, I had always seen a strong connection between the therapeutic value of art for people and any kind of art. I'm not just talking about visual art, whether it's dance or music. My own son is a musician. He plays the piano, and I saw the value of his music in his recovery. And so that connection was always very strong. So when I was awarded the Carter Center Fellowship, it's a year-long fellowship, but you do it in your own community. And I came up with this idea. What I was trying to do was put a face on mental illness to show that people who have mental health challenges are no different. They are not an isolated community. We all have mental health challenges to one degree or another. And I was trying to show through these stories that I wrote and this art that was created that we are all part of the mental health community and that there is no us in them. And having these participants create self-portraits that tried to put into their artwork how they felt about their illness or how they had been seen by others or how they were challenged. I just thought was a really good visual way to draw people in and also to allow the people who are often closeted or overlooked to share their feelings about their challenges. So we came up with the idea of having these art pieces. And so it became Facing Mental Illness, which had several interpretations because it's spelled F-A-C-E-I-N-G. And I got many, many comments from people who said to me, "Did you know you're spelling that wrong?" You're like, yeah, that's kind of the point. But so it was not only putting a face on what mental health challenges look like, but also the secondary part of the title was the art of acceptance. And it was art that not only helped people accept and understand that mental health is important and relevant to all of us, but it also helped the people participating in the project accept their diagnosis, accept their illness, and accept that they didn't have to be embarrassed about it or ashamed of it or hide it, that it was a part of who they were. So it was art that was supposed to bring acceptance on either end, whether you were the person with the mental health challenge or the person looking at the artwork of the person with the mental health challenge. Most of the people, not all, there were a few very talented artists who participated, but most of the people in the project were not artists professionally or, you know, personally even. This was just an opportunity for them to express themselves in a different way. And as you said, it ended up becoming an exhibition that we had over 80 pieces in the exhibition, and some of them were incredible and fascinating. And our library in Sarasota downtown has a big rotunda where you walk in, and all the pieces were professionally framed or displayed. And over 10,000 people during the course of that month were exposed to this exhibit. And I think that the thing that I was most pleased about, having come from that S-word experience where we couldn't get anyone to step forward. With Facing Mental Illness, it was a prerequisite of your participation that you had to be willing to use your real name and you had to be willing to be photographed. And in addition to the art show and the artworks, I also wrote a profile every week for a full year, so 50-some profiles of somebody in recovery where they use their real name and their photograph. So just the fact that we were able to do that and that many people were willing to step forward and share their experience and not feel shame about it, even feel empowered by it. That night of the opening reception of the art show, you know, we had 300 and some people come and all the artists were there. And each of their pieces of art had their photograph by it and a little explanation that they'd written, and they were being honored instead of shunned. So that project was probably the most meaningful project I've done in my long journalism career.
This is really what drawing in and storing people back in is about, isn't it? Not only storing back, but in giving a purpose and informing and sharing a kind of wisdom that doesn't come from a book. And that really is a gift. Can you describe a little bit what those workshops, how the process was? Because I know there were a lot of in-kind services that a lot of the local businesses did to make that exhibition possible.
Right. Yeah, I actually raised over $10,000 in the community to help pay for the project and the film and all the supplies. We had businesses donate art supplies. And at the time, the Herald Tribune was in its own very nice building with a huge community room. And so once a month, we held these art workshops where anybody who had any kind of mental health challenge, whether undiagnosed or diagnosed, could come. And we had all these art supplies that they could play around with. We had food, we had music, we had some professional artists there, not as teachers or therapists or anything, but just to help if people were intimidated because they hadn't done artwork before. And basically, it was like a big party every Saturday. And people were very generous, not only the businesses, but I had many, many volunteers that helped with the project. At the time I applied for the Carter Center Fellowship, my editor at the paper at the time, super supportive, and he said, if you get this fellowship, we will take you off your regular duties and you can just spend the year working on this fellowship. Well, by the time I got the fellowship, the paper had been sold. The editor had left. I had a new editor, and the new editor didn't go for that deal. So that whole year, I was not only trying to do this, what became very large project, but I was also doing my regular duties as a member of the art staff of the Herald Tribune. So there's no way I could have done the project without all the volunteers and help that I had. And that was a real community engagement thing too, because so many people were willing to get involved and to let others know about it. Yeah, it just was the most feel-good project all the way around.
I asked Seedman to describe her current project, Common Ground, which is an outgrowth from the first Facing Mental Illness project. But before going ahead, she shared some background on where and how these projects first emerged.
I hope people understand, I'm not sure if you weren't immersed in the mental health world as I was, that you maybe recognize how much change there actually has been over the last decade in terms of talking about mental health, being comfortable with talking about mental health, being comfortable with seeking treatment or assistance. If there's one good thing that came out of the COVID pandemic, it was that everybody got a lot more aware of mental health challenges and how they can affect your life. And young people today have none of the reservations or stigmas about talking about their mental health challenges, whether it's anxiety or depression or whatever that older generations had. It's now, the stigma is not entirely gone, but it's definitely so much more freer and more open conversation than it was in the past. And when I left the Herald Tribune full time at the end of 2020, as you said, that's when I moved the Facing Mental Illness Project over to Substack and continued to do the profiles of people in recovery. And then eventually that evolved into a podcast with interviews of people sharing their experiences. And I also got involved in founding a group here in Sarasota called Sarasota Strong, which is based on the idea that trauma that has happened to any of us, either individually or collectively, has an impact not only on our mental health, but on the entire community. So Sarasota Strong works to educate the community about the impact of trauma, to help people heal from trauma, and to advocate for people and organizations to provide trauma-informed care and understanding of people. So I've been involved with Sarasota Strong from the beginning, and Sarasota Strong and Facing Mental Illness were approached, I can't remember if it was earlier this year or last year, by Marianne Chappell, who is the owner of a nonprofit gallery called The Spaces Art Gallery in Sarasota, about doing some kind of collaborative project that had to do with art and mental health and so forth. And we came up with the idea of pairing a professional artist with one of the participants from my Facing Mental Illness projects or podcasts, and having them explore their commonalities in terms of mental health challenges, the common struggles that we all go through as humans, and the emotional impact they have on us. So we have about 15 people who were in some way related to the mental health project, and another 15 people who make, I don't know if they all make their living from being artists, but they're all professional artists. And we've put them together as artist teams. And the professional artist is not there to mentor or teach or anything else. They are there as equal partners to produce some kind of piece, and they're very free to use whatever medium they want and explore whatever they want and create a piece mutually. And then we'll have an exhibition of all the works at the Spaceless Gallery next April. And we're just launched the project. As a matter of fact, next week will be the first meeting of all the participants. They'll be meeting their partners for the first time. And we're just really excited to see what this produces. And again, you know, the idea is just to eliminate that line between you're an artist, I'm not an artist, you have a mental diagnosis, I don't have a mental diagnosis, when in fact, we all have so much in common. We may have had different challenges or different levels of challenge, but those challenges are kind of what brings us together in our humanity. So yeah, we're just beginning this project, but we're excited to see where it goes.
At the heart of Seedman's journalistic work, the Facing Mental Illness podcast and blog, and the Common Ground Project, is the power of personal stories as a form of education.
You know, as a journalist and a storyteller for most of my adult life, I always think that people telling real life stories are the way to influence others and educate others. I can write a story that has every little factoid and data point about mental illness that you might, you know, one in five are going to have a significant mental illness and this amount of money is spent and blah, blah, blah. And nobody is going to remember that story. But if I write a story about someone who is sharing their own personal experience with going through postpartum depression or going through an episode of psychosis when they were a brilliant student at Harvard, those are the stories that people remember. Those are the stories that stick. And I continue to think that stories and sharing those stories are the best educational tool. And that's the whole idea behind the podcast and the blog, is to build this whole library, so to speak, of experiences, so that somebody else who might be experiencing some of the same challenges can be inspired by somebody, can learn from what they learned was helpful to them. I do feel that, and this is again from personal experience, I am not a mental health expert. I do not have a psychology degree. I have not been educated academically in any of this. My original experience came from my own personal experience in my own family, and my education about what helps, what doesn't help, what's needed has all come from learning from all of these other people who've shared their stories. So I do often feel like the way things are going to change is from the ground up. You can go to a legislator and say, we need more money for mental health, and he may pay it lip service, but wait till his own child develops a serious mental health condition. That's when you see people really get it. And I mean, I always say facetiously, because I would never wish this on anyone, but when people say, how do we get these legislators to understand how important it is to fund these mental health initiatives? And I'd say, give them a kid with schizophrenia. They'll learn really fast how important it is, because there's just nothing like that firsthand lived experience to open your eyes and help you recognize how critical our mental health is to everything we do, to every system we have, even to our political system, which is mentally ailing lately.
I do want to round this out with something that really inspired me from one of the people that you wrote an article about, and that was Patrick. And he had said that he wants, or his goal really is to be living in the solution, not the problem. I just felt like that was the wisest thing I've heard all year, living in the solution, not the problem. And he says, compassion, it has to start there. People don't realize how far that could go to help someone who is mentally ill. I feel like what you're doing here is about teaching people to have compassion and then hopefully empathy That's amazing. I'm impressed and inspired by all of you. And I'm sure this will be an inspiration to a lot of our listeners.
Well, thank you. This is work that I'm very passionate about. It's not work. All of these people that I've interviewed and who've shared their stories have become friends. I feel like I have this huge network of friends, and my life is so much broader and more open-minded and more aware than it was before I started all this mental health work. So I just hope we can help others understand what a rich part of the world they're missing if they don't embrace all the different people and mental health states and individuals that we have out there. This is a really rich place, and you're really missing out if you don't open your eyes to the idea that people with mental health conditions have a world of talent and creativity and wisdom to share with us.
Thank you for joining us today on this episode of Mission Artist. Our guest today was journalist, storyteller, and advocate Carrie Seedman. Her latest project, Common Ground, launches on April 5th at the Spaces Art Gallery, located at 2051 Princeton Street, Sarasota, Florida. The exhibition runs from April 5th through the 27th, and the gallery hours are 11 to 3, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Her Facing Mental Illness podcast, blog, and S-Word articles can be found at facingmi.substack.com. Links will also be available on our website, missionartist.com. We hope you'll join us for our last episode of the season, where we will be talking to composer and studio artist Greg Smith, who has created music for television, Disney, ESPN, as well as a series of orchestra compositions for family concerts.